yard, the elementary courtyard, and discussed with Mrs. Vinnie Schomel, representing FOG, several proposals that the board will consider regarding campus renovation. The board returned to the meeting room off the library, where we then went into executive session and had a conversation that met the statutes, section 19.85, paren 1, paren C, discussing employee personal matters, and section 19.85, paren 1, paren G, conferring with legal counsel. And we were in that executive session till approximately 7 o'clock. At this time, we've reconvened to open session and are ready for item number 4 on our agenda this evening, to approve minutes of the regular board meeting of April 26th.
Before I make that motion, Dr. Cipher, I'm hearing something. I think it's coming from one of your devices. All right, we'll see. Oh, do you still hear it?
For Mr. Mercier, we received also communication, I believe, from Carrie Bauman, Jeff Dickert, Jay Brunswick, and Melissa Northrup. Board members, are there any other communications that you want to report?
Did you say Mary Kate McCormick?
I did not, thank you. And Mary Kate McCormick.
And also the one I forwarded from Vinnie Schomel.
And Vinnie Schomel will be on our record. Thank you, Mrs. Sherman. Are there any others? Not hearing any others, we will move on then to item number 5, communications. I'll open this evening with communications as a board member to give extreme thanks to Charlie and Evelyn Eckhart and our maintenance crew for the Ballad of Disinfectant Denny, the COVID cowboy. The Eckharts produced this piece of great entertainment that highlights the work of our maintenance crew in a good, positive way. The Disinfectant Denny, on behalf of the maintenance crew, disinfects our school and makes it safe and defeated the COVID virus. If you've not seen it on Facebook, I encourage you to see it. It's entertaining, it's ingenious, it's wonderful, and it represents our school and our maintenance staff, and in fact, our entire school staff very well. Thank you to Evelyn and to Charlie. Other open discussion items, board members?
I'll go on top of that and say last week was Teacher Appreciation Week. And I will thank all our teachers, and I will add the caveat that you don't have to be employed as a teacher to be a teacher. There are so many teachers in this building who teach our kids things from how to tie their shoes, to wash their hands, to play well on the playground. Our staff teaches our children in so many ways how to behave on the bus. And so I just want to thank everyone for all the dedication, especially in this most challenging past year that we've had. It was no small feat what we asked. You all rose to the challenge, exceeded in many, many cases. And our children are getting through it so much better because we have you all here to help them. So thank you very much for everything you do.
Thank you, Mrs. Sherman. Board members, other items you wish to speak to on open discussion this evening? Hearing none, Mrs. Van Meer, are there any hands raised for open discussion?
I'm not seeing any hands raised at this time.
Very good. Thank you for noticing that. I would remind all our audience that if you wish to address the school board with regard to any of the agenda items as we progress through our meeting, we ask you to do so. At that point, raise your hand so that Mrs. Van Meer can bring you into our conversation. Item number 7 this evening on our agenda are our committee reports. We'll begin with financial planning.
I was looking at the order and I thought we had policy first, so I didn't prepare. Excuse me, one second. Yes, the, excuse me, the Financial Planning Committee met on Thursday, April 29th at 4 o'clock. We approved the minutes of the April 14th meeting. The committee continued the discussion of the staffing budget for the 21-22 school year. We discussed anticipated enrollment and the staffing needs in relationship to the increased enrollment trend that we anticipate. We need to see what we need versus what we have now in regards for the pandemic needs. We discussed specific district needs for support staff for regular education, special education and EL students. We also began discussions on our secondary principal position and financial impacts of options replacing this position or reassigning duties. This discussion we will obviously continue in relation to our three-year enrollment and staff plan. Moving ahead, we are going to create a three-year enrollment and staff plan that includes all but is not limited to administration review, elementary classroom number of sections, and special education, regular education, EL needs. Our next meeting is May 12th at 4 p.m., and the fiber technology plan will be discussed. And following that, our meeting on May 26th, we'll be discussing the five-year maintenance plan. Meeting adjourned at 5:54.
Thank you, Mr. Helm. Are there any questions of Mr. Helm and the Financial Planning Committee? Seeing none, let us turn to policy. Mrs. Sherman?
The Policy Committee met on Monday, May 3rd at 5 p.m. The minutes that were approved from our April 19th meeting were included in the packet this evening. We reviewed and discussed our graduation requirements, as well as some NEOLA updates, which are on the agenda for our first reading tonight. We also began discussions for a new policy on staff recognition. We formally had a policy on staff recognition prior to adopting NEOLA. When NEOLA was adopted, that policy was retired, but none was put in their place within the NEOLA groupings that were brought to us from the company. So we are looking at going back and what we can do and to bring that policy back forward in a way that is based on current practice. We will be continuing our NEOLA updates. We have found within the updates that there are some policies that we do not have active in our NEOLA current active policies, so we will be bringing those forward with the NEOLA updates. We are getting through them. We are going to try to do a big push. A lot of the updates that we're going to be bringing forward in committee are ones that we have recently worked on and approved as a board in 2020. So hopefully having recently worked on them will allow us to just look at the NEOLA updates and move those through quickly so that we can get done before the new batch of NEOLA updates comes in July. Our next meeting is next Monday on May 17th at 5 p.m.
Thank you. Are there any questions of the policy committee? Hearing none, we'll turn to student learning. Student learning committee met on May 3rd. We had two agenda items on that meeting. The first agenda item dealt with a discussion of the assessments, the academic assessments that are provided to students by the school district. And the second, that particular item dealt with how do we report those results to parents. Through a very active conversation amongst teachers, administrators, and parents, we identified the essential assessments that are provided for example, for early reading interventions and identification, for our benchmarks through elementary school, and including through the ACT Aspire assessments. We will have a policy for consideration at our next meeting on the 17th, at which time we'll talk about the recommendation to the board on the schedule of assessments and upon the reporting of results to parents. The second item of that agenda dealt with a recommendation that we will be talking about this evening in our next agenda item, approving return to in-person teaching and learning in the 21-22 school year. Are there any questions for student learning? The Employee Handbook Committee also met since our last meeting. We met on May 5th. The Employee Handbook Committee engages with school board members to look at the handbook that outlines for all of our employees the employer's expectations. It sets the conditions of employment, the rules of employment, all of our understandings about how it is that we operate between employer and employee. That is a closed committee made up of board members only. We do open the conversation for an audience to listen to, but not participate. We'll be meeting again on May 19th, at which point we'll bring together the items that we identified at our last meeting, and we will begin focusing upon the revision of those handbook policies at that time. Any questions on employee handbook? Hearing none, we'll move to item number 8 this evening, approve return to in-person teaching and learning for the 2021-2022 school year. Mrs. Van Meer.
Thank you. Yes, I wanted to bring this forth to the board as and as part of the student learning discussion, really talking about what is next year going to look like. We have a lot of things to discuss post-pandemic. What will the fall look like and into the school year? The very first item I think that is of extreme importance is talking about remote learning. Remote learning served its purpose for the pandemic time we were in. We were able to provide minutes of instruction every day. And I'm really proud of that. I'm proud of the fact that we didn't have to shut down our school, that we didn't have to shut down instruction. And I think that our remote learning and synchronous learning was because of that. And our teachers really worked hard to learn this new curriculum, the new technology, and being able to teach first completely remotely for all of their class, all the students, but then to, as we transitioned into in-person by choice, being able to not only teach to the students in the classroom, but those on the screen. And they've done a real phenomenal job. There are challenges that have come along with that. We know that there are students who are not as engaged or not attending in the way that we want them to. And that brings up the question on, are we serving their needs the best that we can moving forward? If you remember, about a year and a half ago, our district was starting to talk about snow days and being able to teach remotely on snow days and maybe no longer having those snow days. And it was such a, wow, it was such a forward-thinking concept. And then you look a year and a half down the road and look at where we're at now. Now we want to get back our snow days, as some of our parents have talked about. So just, it's funny where this conversation has gone. Back then, I said what I'll say again today. I believe that this type of access to our classrooms is a good thing for our kids. And moving forward, being able to do something like this for students who might have medical needs, students who have might have mental health issues, or physical needs of some sort, reasons why they aren't able to be in person, but yet can access the classroom. We have the technology to do that. We have the experts that have been doing that. And I think we can continue to provide students that type of service on a specialized, limited basis. My recommendation, though, would be that we move to in-person learning beginning with the fall of next school year for all students. And I look forward to the board's discussion and potential approval.
Board members, we have a recommendation this evening for the board to take action on approving a return to in-person teaching and learning in September of 21-22. What are your thoughts about this recommendation?
What's the current high school attendance on a daily basis now? In person.
I don't have that exact count, and I know Dr. Mettner's not available today, but it's been difficult at the high school level, Mr. Piatt. I don't know, Mr. Annan, do you have those numbers? I know we've been keeping track of both elementary and high school, but I didn't know if you had those in front of you.
The last I heard, we were somewhere around 40%.
Yeah, I want to say 50, but I thought that would be generous. So I want to be careful about that. And I know elementary, we're more at, Mr. Annan, in the 90%, 95%.
94, 95 the last time I heard. Mrs. Phillips hasn't given me an update, which I haven't asked for.
Right.
I'm curious, and I'll ask for the elementary first, because it's the higher percentage, right? Of those remaining 5 or 6% of students that are virtual, are we aware if there would be hindrances for those students to return next year? Reasons why that, I think in the high school, we're talking about something different. I think in the high school, I know some of the high school students just enjoy being home. They're very successful with the remote learning. They enjoy that. I think we're talking about different circumstances, but because that number is so high in the elementary, I'm wondering if there are circumstances that are keeping those students from returning to school that might still exist next year for that, for accommodations to need to be made.
I couldn't get into any specifics about any specific students because that may breach confidentiality. But Mr. Mulring could provide a little insight as to students that he has learned about that maybe are coming back, but those would be on an individual basis. And we couldn't discuss those in an open session like that.
Right now, I don't think that there is a overarching consensus of why in the elementary school. I don't think there's an overarching theme. I think it's sporadic cases based on different circumstances.
Thank you. That helps. That's what I'm looking for.
I think we've got two different issues going on, as well as that the elementary school, those students are generally not successful with remote learning, and school is part of childcare.
Mm-hmm.
On the high school end, they're able to work independently and can stay home. Now, the other side of the coin is the high school students will probably have access to, all secondary students will probably have access to a vaccine by fall, whereas elementary, that's going to be a ways off yet, probably. So. Mm-hmm. And yet we have 95% of the elementary students back in the building and less than half of our high school students. And a good portion of our high school students have had access to vaccine now for a month or so, mm-hmm. somewhere in there. It's a really interesting situation that we've got ourselves into. And well, I guess my question goes to enrollment as to how many of those students that are enjoying their at-home experience will stay there, whether it's with Gibraltar or with some other online specialist.
And well, that's oh,
we're good at doing in school. And doing in school and remote learning is would be quite taxing to carry that on for the same teacher, mm-hmm. going forward. So I think some of that we just have to deal with. It's going to be what it is.
Mrs. Ward.
So we've lived ourselves into a new normal. Right. I mean, this is the norm is, I'm thinking specifically for secondary students right now, that their normal is being at home. And I hear in your recommendation that we would be returning to in-person learning except for those circumstances. Tell us a little bit about how those circumstances would be decided. I'm asking this mostly for the community who might be wondering. So if I have a student and they don't particularly have a specific need to be remote in terms of a medical diagnosis, but they just prefer it, what will you say to those families when they say, well, my child prefers to learn from home. We did it during the pandemic. Why can't we continue now?
Right. I wouldn't be recommending that moving forward, but that's open to the board for discussion. If you want to look at expanding what we mean by in-person learning and choice. I understand that people are saying a lot of our secondary students have been successful, but there are other students who are not. There are other students who are not engaging, not coming to school, and not being successful, and we can't get them back into school. And so I want to make sure that we're being very clear to our families that we are coming back to in-person learning. I am more than happy to talk to the board more about expanding those choice options if the board would like to do that. But for now, I feel like it's the best right now for me. The best recommendation is for us to move back to bringing everyone in, because we really need to get back a hold of our secondary students, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I, to be clear, I'm in support of this. I think it's the right thing to do as well. My concern is simply for the families who've found that this works and what that will look like when we say, we invite you to come back to school now, and how those conversations will go. But
yeah, I can tell you, and maybe Mr. Mollering could add to this a little bit. Most of what I'm talking about would be something you would see through an IEP discussion or through a 504. So right. Specialized, because it's based on specific needs of students. And that would include physical needs too. But even if a student is ill, I know it doesn't sound like they would access the school if they were really ill, but there could be points where they can access, and should we provide that to them? And I think if they can access, we should allow that. So I didn't go into the vacation. You know, we've always had that challenge up in Gibraltar because of the world that we live in, and it's a world where people come on vacation and families do not get to take vacation during normal times. And so we always have the challenge of families that are here taking vacation at different times. And I know that that's been an issue. This would possibly, if we allow it, would provide some of those families access to the classroom and learning while they're on vacation as well. I'm not suggesting that we do that, but it is an option that we could look at more. That's not part of my recommendation tonight, because I think that would take more conversation.
I think if I understand where you're going, there's a difference between having a remote learning program and access to the classroom for people that are away. Yes. Access to the classroom does not necessarily create a burden for the staff, the teaching staff, to prepare a separate remote learning lesson. So this has been a taxing year for everybody with the blended presence. So I agree with you that we'd like to get everybody back in the school. And we have some opportunities to make the vacation program less taxing for everybody, I guess.
I appreciated Mrs. Ward's use of the word a new normal. Pandemic is not normal. Education in the pandemic is not normal. I take us back a year plus in which we had a statewide emergency. And as part of that statewide emergency, our state government, leading with the Attorney General's office, gave waivers to the regular attendance rules for schools and opened up the opportunity for children to attend school remotely. There's nothing in our attendance provisions that says to children that remote education is normal. It's not. But it is an emergency response that has worked well through this pandemic for many schools, for many children, and for many families. So the one piece that I want us to consider is that remote education is not normal. And as we get back towards some normalcy, that emergency application for remote education should slide out. Parent choice remains. And Mr. Piatt opened the question of how many parents may not choose to return to school. Parent choice has been available to parents in Wisconsin for several decades now. It remains a growing opportunity for parents to choose what schools to attend and how to attend, even virtually, if not in person. Our going back to in-person does not impinge a parent's opportunity to choose. It just brings us back to the public school choices. We should be getting back to the normalcy of in-person. The other aspect that I asked the board to consider is that normal in the school classroom is not a teacher teaching simultaneously to children in class and on screen. in an emergency, we should just reach out and pat our teachers on the back frequently, consistently, with thanks to say, you made it work in an emergency. No one signed up for that as normal. No one anticipated that as being normal. Normal says that that is now a contingency that's allowable with this recommendation upon criteria, not of choice, but of what's a student learning need under the auspices of a, for example, IEP or a 504 plan, or of an agreement between school and family. That's getting us back to normal, classroom teaching to children in person. I also ask us to consider, thirdly and finally, the aspect that we have some families that said, you know, our family's into in-person learning, purely and simply. And while you're remoting and all children aren't in school for that social aspect of being a child in school, we're going to select something else. We've had families that are attending other schools physically or virtually. This is an opportunity at this time in May for us to say to those families, our intention for next fall is to be normal in person. And they can make a choice then if they wish to continue to choose elsewhere or choose back to us in a timely fashion, with enough time to ask questions as to what does it mean to come back. We welcome them all. My thoughts are, how do we get back to normalcy? How do we understand the emergency conditions that made remote education required? And as that emergency moves away from us, what does normalcy look like? And how do we get back to it?
I think being clear when you're saying normalcy, though, you're meaning location, right? I think we...
In-person teaching and learning.
Right. The location of the normalcy of being in school to learn. I think that, and Mrs. Van Meer, please correct me if I'm wrong in this assumption, but I'm going to make the assumption that making a decision on this evening gives the administrative team the ability to really start planning for next year. I know we won't have all the answers, but there are things that we already kind of know. There are things that we want to hope will be a different or fast-tracked, but we need to prepare for them not to be. And then if they are, then great, we can make that change. But I think we need to prepare for what we know now and what we a reasonable expectation. So I think not waiting to make these decisions is going to help us in the long run. I agree with you, Dr. Seifer, that we say we're returning to the normalcy of students learning in the building, what that looks like to be determined. But that's where our learning is going to happen primarily, with the few exceptions as stated, and those who are looking for those exceptions, they talk to their administrators about that, and those are individualized conversations that can take place. But the by and large district community can begin to prepare, and the administration can begin to make those plans so that we'll be more proactive this year around, which we couldn't do as well last year, given how quickly things were changing all summer long. So.
Let's make sure we're hearing all voices. Mr. Schreier?
I'm certainly a strong advocate for having in-person learning for this fall. It's not just locally, but nationally, there's growing concerns with behavioral health, especially in our youth. And that's largely due to the social interaction or lack thereof. So I am a strong advocate for it. I also believe that our parents, they'll continue to make those decisions that are in the best interest of their family. So if they do decide to go elsewhere, they absolutely have that ability to do so.
I agree. I think we really need to get back to maybe not completely, you know, normal in all aspects, because we don't know how things will be in the fall, but just to get back to normal teaching and learning in person and having all kids come. And I actually think that if kids in the secondary school maybe aren't given the option to stay at home, I kind of feel like they will, more of them will come. I think right now they've just gotten into the routine of, my friends are staying home, so I'm going to stay home. I'm comfortable at home. You know, I can come and go as I please. I just think that the kids will want to come back. If they don't, you know, everybody else will be like, okay, we're going to go back now, and they won't have a choice. And I know some families probably will still choose to maybe go somewhere else and do virtual learning, like through an online school. But a lot of the things that I've been hearing from my own children in the secondary school, as well as some teachers and parents, I just think there's a lot of bad habits that have been formed this year. And I think we really got to move away from that before these bad habits become permanent bad habits moving in forward into the rest of high school and college. And I also think we have to be very careful if we start to say we're going to allow virtual learning for this and that and the other thing. I think that could be kind of a slippery slope. I think we have to really, really be specific about what that's going to be okay for. Not just because somebody doesn't feel like coming to school one day and, oh, let's do virtual learning, and the next day they're not, and back and forth. I think it's really hard for the other students in the classes and for the teachers to really, I think it just throws everything off for everybody else when there's not consistency with kids being there every day, and some are virtual, some are not. And sometimes I've heard that kids don't even let anybody know that they're not going to be there. So I think, you know, that's not good either, because nobody really knows what to expect. I think people just need to get back into a routine and just, I know it won't be completely normal the way it was. I mean, maybe we'll never be completely the way it was. We'll take some things out of this that we've learned, and like the good things that we've learned, and maybe go forward and keep doing them. But I think we really do need to get back to in person for those who choose to want to do it at our school.
Thank you, Mr. Helm.
Thank you. Yeah, I feel as the board, we've tried to take the appropriate measures as we move through this process. And I think moving back to in-person learning is the proper step to take next. And I think if we can, you know, approve this and give the administration some guidance as to how to plan for next year and how they think the school year will look and how they can plan for the students that may or want to stay with the remote learning, that this will give some time to formulate those ideas and plans and to look at those on an individual basis. So I feel like improving to return to in-person learning is a step that needs to be taken next by the board.
And I would just add to what Mrs. Carrier said, and I think you're right. I think like it's important to have the parameters of what those exceptions are. And I think the way that Mrs. Van Meer and Mr. Mulray have talked to us about that with the 504s, the IEPs, and having those as actual set plans that really lay out, these are your expectations. And if you don't follow them, then this option isn't an option anymore. We have to stick within that. So I appreciate that being a component of that to ensure the follow through, which unfortunately we're just not able to do at this time, given where we are in the year. So,
and I think that I don't want to repeat what everyone said because it sounds like we're coming to consensus here, but I think in the rethinking of that, and we don't need to have all the answers tonight, this is the administration can run with this, but Ms. Sherman, I think you were kind of gearing off of this, but I think the ability to not only be very specific about what students can have access to it, but also behavioral expectations while learning remotely within the parameters of their own 504 or their IEP about things that we didn't necessarily have the ability to prescribe in the pandemic because we had so many students and the access and the variability of internet connection. I'm thinking specifically of like having your camera on while we're learning, things like that. I think those types of behaviors we can be very prescriptive with for each of the students who needs to access it, and we can set those parameters a little bit more precisely. But we don't need those.
Thank you, Mrs. Ward. I think that's a very important piece for the board would be intending, and that is that an action this evening really says to the administration, make every plan now, if this is approved, if the recommendation is approved, for us to return to in-person teaching and learning as our primary model. The caveat is that there will be individual plans required for individual needs. Those will be prescribed and discussed by the administration. For board information, I'm informed by Mrs. Phillips that the elementary participation has not changed since the last mail she sent out to us. It's still at 94%. From Mrs. Krause to all of our parents, all of our participants, the panelists, a note to be mindful that the vaccine is only emergency approved, changing momentarily, perhaps, in the news, and that not all 16-year-olds and older students are going to get it until FDA approved, and maybe not even then. But that is then in September, and we are making some plans now for planning for September. Are there any hands raised before we entertain a motion? Are there any hands raised, Mrs. Van Meer? No hands are up.
No hands, Dr. Seifer.
Thank you. Board members, are there other comments that we should make, or are there any other considerations that we might want to meld into a motion of action on this recommendation?
Dr. Seifer, I'm curious if there was anything in student learning that if the student learning committee had any recommendations or thoughts on this.
I believe it, to characterize it properly, was that the recommendation is right-headed, that it is in the best interest of good quality in-class instruction, how difficult it is to teach remotely and in person simultaneously. We can do so in emergency, but that's not designed for our everyday practice outside of the emergency. I did not hear any person saying, whoa, I want to stay remote. The board has a recommendation this evening. Is there a motion for this recommendation?
I would make a motion to approve the return to in-person teaching and learning for the 2021-2022 school year.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Mrs. Ward, a second by Mr. Piatt, to approve a return to in-person teaching and learning for the 2021-2022 school year. Are there any questions of board members regarding this motion? Any amendments to the motion? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? The motion passes. Mrs. Van Meer, thank you very much for the recommendation this evening. We turn now that recommendation back over to the administration for planning for the 21-22 school year.
And I would thank you for bringing this forward at this time. I think it's important to get a head start. So thank you for forward thinking on that, to be proactive in planning.
Item number 9 this evening follows from our last meeting, to hear board thoughts about the high school study and consideration of a professional response to the study. At our last meeting, I read the report of our high school study. We did not have any conversation at that time, and that was perhaps appropriate in a first listening. We wanted this evening to allow board members the opportunity to make any comments with regard to your reading, your thoughts, your recommendations about how we should respond to the study. I open this up for board member conversation.
I would still, I had talked about it at our last meeting, but I still would like to see us expand this into our elementary so that we can get a clear picture of our entire K-12. And In reflecting, I realize that even if we see similar similar things happening between the buildings, it doesn't mean we will have an identical response to each, but that there might be overlap, or there might be things that we find that we're like, that are happening across the board that we can address simultaneously.
And I would like to see us also go into the elementary, but then also having an anonymous culture survey on an annual basis that goes out to all staff. And I would like to include that in our public message of what we're intending to do.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I don't think this should be a one and done item on our agenda. I agree with you about doing the survey at the elementary level as well, and then continuing this on an annual basis to get the feedback, see what people feel like the culture is that they're experiencing, or what the culture is here within the district.
And I think one thing that we had touched on at our last meeting in regards to the responses received was coming up with a way to more, trying to word this the right way, to have some clear role definitions of what part we all play in this district, how we play that part, and how we all work together. I think that everybody, we all want to help, and we all want to make a difference, right? We wouldn't be here, none of our staff, the board, our administrators, we would not be here if our intent wasn't to make a difference. But oftentimes we find blurred lines of how it is we can go about doing that, and what our role is in that. And I feel like we need to spend some time really making that clear picture and setting some active lines of collaboration, how those work and how we can make that work without the worry. You know, we've gone from having unions that negotiated to not being able to do that, to individual employees and around the board, and how can we find something that will now work for where we are in this moment, and give people a voice, give them the sense of making a difference while still maintaining the parts that we have to play, that we can't all be the decision makers, we can't all be the planners, we can't all be in the classroom. We all each have a piece in the puzzle. Sorry, that might have been long-winded.
I think greater transparency.
Mm-hmm.
Correct me if I'm wrong, is one thing you're alluding to, though.
Is that— Right, and from the whole scale, I mean, from us at the board all down to our coaches, our part-time, I mean, everybody in between, so that we all know we're on the same page about what it is our role is within the organization, because we know a teacher isn't just a teacher, a support staff isn't just a support staff. We all have many hats and things that we do that aren't even within our role, but it's what's needed right now. And there's always decision making that needs to happen. And I think that's one thing I get out of these answers, is that we have a line where people don't feel included, and yet at the same time, we can't always include them, right? Just as I can't be in the classroom making the decisions for them, they can't always be here at the board table making the decisions for me. But how can we find some ground so that nobody feels completely like they're screaming and nobody's listening?
We don't want anybody to feel inconsequential.
There you go. That's a great way to say it. Thank you.
We don't want folks to feel inconsequential. At the same time, I raise this question with you. Do we over-consequence, is that a word, consequence? If we apply the same tool to the rest of our faculty and staff that we applied to the high school study. A high school study had a trigger point or trigger points. It had concerns that were raised, and the study was to address those specifically. Is the board's interest in designing something differently for a school-wide or elementary and other staff-wide, or to apply the same investigation slash study that was applied to the high school? I will say one, for me, we designed a study for the specific concerns that were raised at the high school, not K-12, not district-wide. And I don't believe that it's appropriate to apply that same set of questions, that same approach necessarily to the school in which those specific concerns were not raised. I'm not opposed to our doing the cultural survey, to do something that gives us a good base and an annual or frequent look and conversation. But I am just warning the board, not warning, wrong word. I'm asking the board to consider the application of a misapplied tool.
Right. Several years ago, we did the, what was it, the school perceptions survey. Tina, was that the, I can't remember the company's name. And we did that, and our intention was to keep doing it, and we have since not done it. That's where I'd start, is just make that a scheduled item to do that school perceptions, the staff survey. And has Sue made any progress on doing the student survey?
Yes.
Student survey?
Yes, we are moving forward with both the graduate as well as the senior survey. We had talked to her about a potential community survey, so I would want to bring that back to the board this summer and see if you would like to move forward with that. But it would be very easy to put together a staff survey as well, because as Mr. Piatt said, we have already done that with Sue. Sue actually led that, Mr. Piatt.
Mm-hmm.
So they've done that once, which would be a nice baseline. So if you wanted to do something like that K-12 as a general cultural climate survey, I think that would be a good way to go about it.
I think that's
what I like about that is it's from an outside source, and they come in and present to the board their findings, and you know, they can look at different trends and patterns. So I think that might be a good way to go.
They had a real good format, presented it very well.
Yeah.
It was easy to understand, I guess, and you could disaggregate the data in a variety of different ways. And I think that's just something we should calendar for every other year. Maybe every year is too frequent to do it, but every other year for staff, maybe less frequently for the community, every third year. But I think that would be a good way to get some data over time, and you have real data, not I think this is what they said. Were you on the board when we did that one, Steve?
Yes.
Okay. So you're, Angela, were you?
I don't know.
That was before your time. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and I think that would be, and they're really good at doing it, so I would highly recommend that that's the avenue we proceed to just get some data going on what our staff, our community, and our graduate students are thinking about their experience here.
I'm also aware that the district the board used to do its own study and not hire it out of its mm-hmm. staff and its community. And that's also remains an option. Would the board engage then with, I'll start that again. The high school study starts off with parent and staff concerns. Would we engage then with our staff on the construction of such a annual tool so that we are asking folk across the board to participate in gaining the information that we seek?
I guess I'm not quite following what you're suggesting.
I'll reword it. The board may authorize this study, and I'm going to rephrase it from the high school study and leave that apart. This annual cultural surveying, I'll take Mr. Schreier's words, if I may, that we conduct an annual educational cultural survey, staff and community, as Mr. Piatt has indicated, maybe on a differentiated schedule. We could hire this out and go to school perceptions and say, you design the questions, you look into your question banks and look at the way in which you've done similar studies in other places and propose to us. That's an option. A different option slightly is to say, let's ask ourselves, what is it that we want to find out? Let's engage our teachers and the design of the questions that we'll be asking all of us to participate in. So I'm asking if we farm out the sourcing of this questionnaire, or if we become more inclusive in who can contribute ideas, like the staff, the high school, the staff concerns in the high school study. We asked and we incorporated those into that study, and we incorporate the ideas of everyone into this cultural survey.
Yeah, I'd like to see something more along that line. I think then we're going to get something that's unique to our district. I'm glad School Perceptions is doing for our graduates. I think that's great. I think we need something that's more standardized. But I think when it comes to our staff specifically, I think being able to know, we might have a set of questions next year and we get the answers and we do some things and we're making improvements. And then we might not want to ask the same ones next year. We might be moving on into a different area. I think it gives us so much more flexibility. And I think that we.
No, School Perceptions will design questions to fit any particular need that we wanted to find out. The advantage of using their survey is that they do these across the country. And if we do only our school, we have information in a vacuum without anything to compare it to. Whereas they have a set of standardized questions and standardized processes and analyzation that you can then compare across districts and across demographics and all of that, which if we do our own internal survey, we don't have that data. We don't have anything to compare it to.
Right, ourselves. And I think there'd be I could see the benefit to that on the community side. I think when you're talking about the community, I could see that looking at it, but do I care what how another district and another staff feels? I don't know. I care about what my staff and my district feels. And if just because it's typical for 70% of staff to be unhappy about this issue, do we say, well, we're okay with that because that's the typical response? Or do we say we want it to be better?
Well, anytime,
you know, I don't know.
Anytime you have any negative, you can always say, I would like to do better.
Right.
But it's hard to know what's normal and what's abnormal if you're only talking to yourself.
Okay, I get that.
So the survey that was done before, what was ever done with the results of that?
School Perceptions did an anonymous survey on the climate in the building, and several other issues were combined in there. And they came and presented it in a format that was easy to understand. It was a statistical analysis. You could compare it across different employee groups. You could compare it across districts. You know, you may have an employee group that's extremely happy with policy X and a different employee group very unhappy with the same policy. So you can weigh that out, and then you can compare that to how districts across the state or the nation feel about similar issues. So you get a real good normalization of your data that way.
Were there any issues in that survey that were brought up that were asked by the board or the administration at that point?
I couldn't understand though.
Were there any issues that were brought up in that survey that were addressed by either the administration or the board after getting the results of the survey?
Yeah.
Yes. Very specifically, we had an issue regarding attendance. And we worked through that as a district. Tim Mulrain did a tremendous amount of work on that. And we continued to monitor the data. We changed some policy language to enhance that, and we saw some improvements there. There was also a more, overarching morale. We like to see the morale improved in the district, which is hard to quantify. If you think about it, that's a kind of a hard thing to quantify. But we took that on as a district leadership team. And as the board knows, that leadership team spent a lot of time creating and planning special events and activities for the staff. If you might remember, we went out and did some community service one spring. We had some travels and trips, special trips like to mini golf or other different things where we came together as a team. I'm thinking about that arts. Oh gosh, feeling I'm put on the spot here. What was the name of that art place we went to, Mr. Annan? But anyway, we did a lot of different fun team activities with the staff to help them feel more together. They were talking about how sometimes people at one end of the building don't even talk or get to know people at the other end of the building. So how could we improve that? So those were things that we were specifically working on.
If the board likes the concept of starting or of using something like school perceptions, could the board look, Mrs. Van Meer, at the results of the last survey?
Yes.
As a baseline, we could look at the questions that were raised and asked and begin a conversation about the appropriateness of that instrument.
And I take it back, Mr. Piat, I was in fact on the board. That was the very beginning of my first term, at the very beginning. Now when we said attendance, I said, oh yeah, I remember that. Right after I started, we
spent quite a while debating between several companies to do this survey even, and I have to say that Student Perceptions was not my first choice, but after we did it, I was very impressed with the work that they did and how they presented it, and really thought it was thoughtful and well designed.
Well, and I think Dr. Zeifer, you're on the right path with, let's look at those results. Let's look at what our questions were and how the results are presented and those things. I don't know that they need to come give us a formal presentation. I think just the board being able to review that material so we can say, yes, we like this and this is the line we want to go down, or we feel like maybe we want a more personalized internal approach.
Do we have any idea when the graduate survey is going to be completed, Tina?
Soon. I don't have an exact date, but we're right in the middle of that.
I think that once our new board members take a look through that, they might see that that's a good benefit to use for the whole staff and community. I mean, it's very well presented.
I think we need to be well aware of the fact that as we study the results of that survey, which was 2015, is that correct? Around then?
Somewhere around there.
That we're going to see.
I think it'd be 3 years ago.
It'd be 18.
Yeah, it'd be 3 years ago. So.
Oh, is it later? Okay. I think we're going to see a lot of similarities in the responses. as a recent staff member, I think we need to acknowledge the fact, I'm not poo-pooing surveys because they are important in collecting data, but they need to be done only in times of crisis. I mean, so they need to be done consistently, to Mr. Schreier's point. We need to be very stringent with ourselves about making sure that we do that every single year if we're going to get accurate data. And we need to ask the same questions, because if we're only asking the questions that we are seeking out the answers to, we need to measure the change of those responses in years to come. So I think we need to keep those questions the same. I don't want us to fall into the trap of saying, well, let's do a survey and then do stuff after that. I'm not saying that the good work that was done after the last survey, I'm not trying to discount that, but I do think that we're going to see a lot of similar feelings of the people who work in this district. And I think it's incumbent upon us to come to some action on the results of the survey back then and also the study now. And I realize that doing a survey and then creating action steps is absolutely a path. A survey is taking the temperature. It's not a prescription.
I think the piece we missed the last time was to keep doing it over time.
Right.
And I think that's the important piece, is that when you're doing things like that, you're measuring something. And what gets measured gets done. And
right.
If we keep measuring it and we still can't fix at least some of the issues, then we have a different problem. But
I think the piece that was missing
is that it was a one and done.
Right. And I think that, unfortunately, I don't mean to say that the problems that we have identified would have been solved if we had surveyed our staff every year since the survey was done initially. But I do think that if we had continued to take the temperature consistently, we would have seen how the action steps that we had taken back in 2018 had, you know, fulminated. And here we are again at a difficult time with some challenging findings that are in our lap that we need to consider.
I think the other thing is that you do it multiple times over multiple years. It's a self-examination process that just becomes normal. We're not offending anybody or picking on anybody. It is just, that's what we do, get better.
In the conversation about this topic, it appears as if there's some consensus going that we need to do this kind of surveying, questioning with appropriate interactions and with follow through on a more annual basis, if not annual basis. We need to do it for our school staff, not just faculty, but staff. We need to do it for our community and then be responsive to the results that we see. We need to standardize this over time so that we're asking the same questions. As Mrs. Ward has indicated, we can measure response and change by using a similar instrument over time. Would the board be agreeable that we can have the administration put on a future agenda, a return of those responses of that last survey? We can look at the format, we can look at the results, we can have some conversation about what was done, but more importantly, we can verify the example we might employ going forward. I'm seeing some nodding with regard to that. This is not an action item, but it does give us some direction to the administration with regard to the question of how do we respond to the high school study? Well, I did not hear anybody saying, let's apply the high school study question and certain study strategy to the elementary school. And perhaps I spoke against that, to the point of liking my own response.
Oh, you liked your own response. Because I did originally say I wanted to do that.
I heard that. That's why I'm looking at you.
I know, and I'm looking back at you.
I'm liking your thoughts, Steve.
And I think there's some merit to not opening up a can of worms that is perceived to not exist. But because we perceive it to not exist does not mean that nothing, that it doesn't exist. I also understand about, okay, if we do a survey, but then I guess part of me will say, I would put that on hold momentarily to review the survey that we took. I think there's some merit to doing in-person surveys as well, because I think there's just something to, I mean, you could see, I sit here and talk with my hands. I can't do that when I'm typing in an answer. There's just a level of personalness when we do some of those. And I would say as a board, that's something we should discuss about doing random samplings of in-person as well. And maybe there are a series of questions. I don't know. But I would put that on hold to look at what that 2018 survey results were. But I think Lauren's right that we're going to see some of the same things then that we just saw in this high school. And that survey was done for all K-12 staff, correct?
I would imagine we will see some of this. It would be odd if we didn't.
Right. So
we still have the same people.
To not turn the lens though to the elementary is turning our backs and saying, because we didn't get to the point of having this bigger, more obvious problem, that a problem doesn't exist. And we just don't know. I mean, we don't know without looking.
I don't think anybody's saying
that. Is something boiling? I guess, not that a big problem exists, but are there things boiling there that we're not aware of?
I think that if you look at the survey, you'll see that we'll find out.
That's
it's a much more scientific way of going about it than having 10 individuals that you invite in and ask 13 questions to. It's much more in-depth than that. So
if we think about this as not
Warren,
I'm sorry.
Mr. Pia, please finish.
No, I'm done.
Thank you. Mrs. Ward.
Sorry, Mike. I think there's a delay in my connection. If we think about this not as shining a light away from, like, if we think about it as a spotlight on the secondary, I don't think we're not turning the spotlight onto the elementary, but by doing this survey, as Mike was saying, it's kind of like backing up our spotlight and catching all of it. And then if we see in the results that we need to go in, that can be our next action. You know, we can take the temperature of the elementary, and if we see that there's these concerns that are boiling, to use your word, I think that's an indication that we need to go and do something similar and maybe redesign the questions or the format to be fitting to the needs that we see. Would be what I would say.
Other board thoughts on this agenda item?
Well, I think we can do all the surveys that we want, but they're useless unless we follow through up on them. So that would be my word of advice to us, is that just because we do a survey doesn't mean that we don't follow through up on it. So.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that, Don, that it's, I like where this is going, that we're going to have some ongoing, I like Lauren's word, temperature taking, and that we can make plans to do that. We still have to address right now. And other things, that's one piece that I think that came out of this, is that we need to be looking more often at what's going on. And I think it will take some more discussions to dig into some of this other ones. I mean, I touched at the beginning about really clearly defining everyone's roles and how we all work together and what those, where the collaboration can take happen and how it can happen and some of those things. But I think there's more in here that even doing, defining those things, setting to do more surveys, I think there's still a piece or two we should look at addressing here.
A survey doesn't solve anything.
Right.
It only tells us where we need to look. And that's, and if we can get a consistent basis for what we need to look at, and I think everybody doing it 1 year and the next year or 2 years later, until you get several years of it in, I think everybody feels like we're throwing rocks at somebody, and that's really not the intention of it. We have a pretty good staff, we just got to work together better. And I think that's what we all have to take part in. So if we can do something to move that along, then great. So, and it just becomes, by doing this a similar survey over time, it becomes a normal process of self-reflection. And I thought that school perceptions did a really good job of taking the temperature and presenting the information in a way you could understand
it. Mr. Schreier, is this, are we moving back towards the ideas that you were putting forth?
Yes, you are. So a lot of organizations will do their full culture survey, and then 6 months later, they'll do what they call a pulse check, which is half of those questions, but you still want to keep 5 questions or so that are consistent throughout the cycle. So to the example of throwing stones at something, yeah, it would seem like that if you are doing it just once a year, maybe every other year. It really takes a long time to get that baseline to identify exactly where you're at on that map.
Thank you. Mrs. Carrier?
Well, I would just basically echo what most other people are saying. I still think, like I said at the last meeting, that we should do something at the elementary level, whether it be some kind of perception survey or our own survey. I'm not really sure at this point what we should do. Like, I get what you're saying about not just taking the concerns at the high school and like asking questions like that for the elementary school, since it's not like somebody came to us and told us that something was going on that we should investigate. But I still think it is important to measure the culture in all the areas of the school. And by doing a survey, and even like Eric said, doing it, like if you did something twice a year, I think that would be even more beneficial. Like something like, say things are going on in the fall and you get those results, and then see, did we address those issues? Is it better in the spring? I mean, I just think more needs to be done. And like Don said, doing a survey alone isn't enough. Something else has to be done in response to the survey and the results that you get.
Thank you.
I agree with Eric in sharing that you should use the same questions over time. When we had our district leadership team, I can give you a specific example of another thing we worked on was rollouts of new initiatives. I don't know if the board, and Lauren, maybe you remember this, our teachers were overwhelmed because we had to roll out like educator effectiveness. There were some other state mandates that were all coming down at once, and people just, there was too much on the plate is what we heard over and over and over again. And they wanted us to do a better job of rolling out those initiatives. So we used that specific question. Well, there were others too, but that's one specific one that we asked several times during the year, and the administration had put together a communication piece on initiatives that we worked through. And the staff really responded well to that. So there are some specific things that we can do that will be beneficial if those same questions are used throughout. So I agree with that.
I like the 6 months shortened too, because then you're not just throwing rocks. You're actually you're setting targets and seeing, are we getting there in 6 months? Are we nowhere close? Are we on the right track? And it gives actions, responses without them it being like a, we want to know how we're doing, right? It's just an automatic, they're used to, we're doing an at these times.
Right.
What I like is when it's very specific about, for example, attendance, for example, rollout of initiatives. When it's very specific like that, it's so much easier for the administrative team then to put a plan together, implement it, and then remeasure it. When you just say morale, that doesn't help us put specific steps in place. Morale should be an overall feeling that happens when those specific items are addressed. Does that make sense? Oh, morale should overall improve if we're able to show improvements in very specific areas that the survey is targeting as concerns.
Then I anticipate at a future agenda, we will bring forward the 2018, if that was the last time we did a school perceptions. We'll look at that study, we'll look at the tool, we'll look at the results, we'll have a conversation. Board nodding about that? This is not an action item. Let us move on to item number 10 then this evening, to approve a resignation from employment.
Thank you. I have received a resignation letter from our social studies teacher, Charlotte Anderson. Mrs. Anderson has been with us for 3 years, and she has accepted a teaching position in her hometown, closer to her family, and we thank her for her 3 years of service to our community, and we wish her the best in her new role.
I move to approve the resignation of Charlotte Anderson from her employment.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Mr. Piatt, a second by Mrs. Sherman, to approve the resignation of Charlotte Anderson from her employment as a social studies teacher. Are there any questions regarding this motion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 Aye. Aye. You opposed? Mrs. Van Meer, when we conduct our exit interviewing, I'd like to have you please inform me of the date and time so that we can arrange for the board members to be present. And also, as we did not make that conversation with Dr. Mettner's resignation last meeting, let's also add an exit interview and a board member present for that also. Thank you. Item number 11 this evening is to approve posting for a secondary social studies teacher.
So moved.
Second. We have a motion by Mr. Piatt, a second by Mr. Helm, to approve the posting for a secondary social studies teacher. Before we move that, is there, Mrs. Van Meer, is there any special licensure in the social studies discipline that we are seeking? Any subjects that are particular to this assignment?
Secondary social studies licensure, Dr. Seifer. I don't have a specific course that I'm talking about, but, and Dr. Mettner, if he was here, he could add in that, but we'll make, do you want your motion to specifically say what license number you're seeking?
Nope.
Okay. I'm looking for a secondary social studies position with flexibility, so that we can have that person teach a variety of subject areas. So I would look for the standard license number, just don't know it off the top of my head.
There isn't one.
We will make sure that we are hiring the person with the right qualifications.
Very good, thank you. I'm reminding myself, did I hear a motion?
You hear a motion and a second.
And a second.
And a second. All those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 You opposed? The motion passes. Thank you. I was listening for the licensing questions and I forgot that there was a motion on the table. Item number 12 this evening is to approve employment of elementary music teacher.
Yes, thank you. Mr. Annan, I'm going to turn this over to you if you'd like to share your candidate that you're bringing forth for approval for the board.
Thank you very much, Ms. Van Meer and the board. On Thursday, April 22nd, 2021, an interview committee, which included Mr. Charlie Eckhart, Elizabeth Thomas, Casey Sattler, and Carrie Lewis and myself, interviewed five highly qualified candidates for the elementary K5 1.0 full-time music position. 14 people applied for this position on WECAN. The interview consisted of 30 to 45 minutes of the candidate answering questions about various topics, including candidate background, teamwork and professionalism, instruction and assessment, classroom management, parent community support, and goal setting. All candidates answered the same question, and at the end of the interview, conducted a 10-minute mini lesson with the learning target of understanding quarter, whole, and half notes. Candidates were also given a copy of the job description prior to the interview. As a result of this process, and without reservation, I recommend Ms. Kate Hussey as recommended for hire. She is from Brilliant, Wisconsin, and graduates from the University of Wisconsin Stevens Point this May with a degree in teaching general music. References speak Kate's ability to work with all individuals at a high level of rigor and expectations. Music is her passion, and she is an accomplished piano player. Other references state that she develops a strong rapport with children very early on in the music program and is flexible in nature. She is reliable, goal-oriented, and will take the music program to a higher level of achievement. Kate goes on to say, being from a small town as well, I know what it is like to go to a small school and for kids to be able to participate in band, choir, cross country, and be in the musical as well. Students have many opportunities to participate and excel in a variety of activities at Gibraltar. Kate, I believe, will lay a solid foundation of musical skills for students to develop within the Gibraltar area's music program, and I recommend her for hire beginning August 30th, 2021.
Thank you, Mr. Annan. Is there a motion to this employment?
I move to approve the employment of Kathleen Hussey as elementary music teacher.
Second.
We have a motion by Mrs. Sherman, a second by Mr. Piatt to approve the employment of Kathleen Hussey as our elementary music teacher. Are there any questions to this motion? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. The opposed? The motion passes. We look forward to meeting Kathleen Hussey. Item number 13 on our agenda this evening is to approve support staff, confidential employee, and administrative contracts for the 21-22 school year.
Thank you. The board has been in the process of discussing our staffing for next year as well as employee performances over the past several meetings. And we are bringing these to the table for board consideration and approval. As you know, approving this, we approves the contractual status of our employees for the upcoming school year. Any changes to salaries or benefits would be decided or discussed at future board meetings.
Thank you, Mrs. Van Meer, and I appreciate your making mention of the important fact of our practice. The school board has been meeting in executive session over the past several meetings and months to review the employment performance of each of the persons that we're recommending this evening. Is there a motion to this agenda item?
So did we talk about the specifics of the recommendation from the Financial Planning Committee before a motion is made on this?
Would you clarify your question, please?
Sure. And I'm sorry if I missed it, but the Financial Planning Committee had specifically discussed the number of contracts to approve that they would recommend, or that had discussed how many support staff would be needed for the 21-22 school year. And I'm sorry if I missed that come up in this. And if not, I'd like to make sure that gets passed along to the entire board. I have it. I'm happy to do it. I just want to make sure. 19. So in the discussions that the Financial Planning Committee had regarding current staffing for this year for the 2020-21 school year, we have contracts for 22 support staff members. If you will remember, we had, the board had approved hiring an additional 6 support staff members to help us with our pandemic needs. Only 5 of the 6 were hired. We have also had reassignment of a support staff member within this school year. So we were, there were 4 additional support staff contracts issued from the 19-20 school year to 2021. And looking at the projections for enrollment, as well as looking forward to what our district's needs will be as far as regular education, special education, EL students, as well as continued pandemic staffing needs, it was the committee felt that having continuing with 19 support staff contracts would be the an appropriate number to meet all of those needs, including being responsible looking at our budget fiscally. But it is a change in the number of contracts that would be approved. So I believe in the motion that would be made, we would need to specify that number, because it is not our usual where we are approving all current contracts into the next year.
I do recall the conversation, but I wanted to have someone else say it.
I'm happy to say it. I had my notes.
That said,
is there a motion in there?
Any board question or comment to Mrs. Sherman's explanation? That explained, then please phrase your motion.
I would be happy to phrase that into a motion. I move to approve 19 support staff the same amount of confidential employee and the same administrative contracts for the 21-22 school year.
May I ask if you were saying to approve 19 support staff and all recommended confidential employee and all recommended administrative contracts?
That's exactly what I was saying. Thank you. You cut so many words out of that for me. Evelyn, did you get that?
I'll exactly second that.
did you get that, Evelyn? So the motion is to approve what?
19 support
19.
Staff.
What do you want? Oh, no. Okay. Sorry. No. Here's, if the second will allow me to amend.
Yep.
I have a note on here, Mrs. Van Meer, that I'm going to, but well, actually, I have a note that I'm supposed to, as presented. Is that what you said, Steve, correct? As presented or as recommended? Yes, but as recommended would be,
yes,
count as this, that would count as covering, okay, or covering that. All right. So the motion then is to approve 19 support staff, all recommended confidential employees, and all recommended administrative contracts for the 21-22 school year.
I'll second that.
We have a motion by Sherman, a second by Mr. Piatt, to approve 19 support staff contracts, all recommended confidential employee contracts, and all administrative contracts for the 2021-22 school year. Are there any questions regarding this motion? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
You opposed? The motion passes. Thank you. Item number 14 is to approve an extension of employee contract provisions as outlined in the employee handbook.
Thank you. As we were going through the employee handbook, and as the board, as we said before, was having ongoing discussions regarding staffing and performance of our employees, it took a little bit longer this year to work through all of that. And then Evelyn was looking through the handbook and discovered that we had a date specifically set for providing actual contracts. And that date, I believe, was May 15th, correct? Yeah, it says each employee will be provided an annual contract on or before May 15th of the current work year. We would like the board to consider just, you know, the employee handbook committee is working through this. They may change the language permanently, but we need some assistance and support for this year. The idea is to make sure everyone knows they have a contract to improve the contractual status. So we're asking that we change that language to confirm the contractual status or any other language the board would prefer, as opposed to providing the annual contract. And if we get that, then what Evelyn can do is issue letters that basically tell all the employees your contractual status is approved for next year. That gives the board the time to go through salary benefits, and then a final contract would be issued to the employees at that time. Was that too much talking, or does that make sense?
I will say that in the policy, in looking over the policies that I'm doing for the handbook, we do have a policy that is, and I'm trying to pull it up because they're a letter of reasonable assurance. Now that's for only one of the employee groups, but that is one language that we use in policy. And in the discussions, we in the student, in the, excuse me, in the employee handbook meeting, we also talked about that it was a, oh goodness, now I just lost the other, I just lost the second one that we had talked about. I'll think of it in a second, sorry. A confirmation of continuing contract was the other language that we had talked about. And that covers letting the staff know that they will have a contract while not providing the specific contract to allow the board time to work out benefits, salaries, things like that.
That was an explanation. Is there a motion that's coming out of this?
Yes, and I was hoping somebody might have a preference on language. In that case, I would move to approve the extension of employee contract provisions to as outlined in the employee handbook that allows us to provide a confirmation of continuing contract.
Before there's a second to that. Are we asking for an extension of or a change in the language of?
You're right. Really, I'm asking for a change in the language.
The change of language of the submission of a confirmation letter of their continuing contract, it complies with 118, statute 118, that talks about continuing contracts for teachers and administrators.
Yeah. So what we really need to do is amend our employee handbook.
Yes.
To this language, and
yes,
then just issue the letter.
Yes.
Okay.
But because the employee contract, the employee handbook is policy, we don't want to be stymied by our policy that we cannot meet at this point. So we're asking this evening to change the language from submission of the contract, the actual contract, to submission of a confirmation letter of their continuing employment. That meets the statute that says you get to know if you're going to be employed for next year. Mr. Sherman, can you put that into a motion?
I would
or
love
any
to.
Other board member?
I would move to approve the, I want to say this right. I move to approve a change in our employee handbook to providing a letter of confirmation of continuing contract to our employees.
Continuing employment. The contract will follow.
Continued employment, yeah.
Did I hear you say that you are moving to amend the employee contract to substitute the language receipt of a confirmation letter of their continuing contract by May 15th for the language that requires that provides an actual contract?
Correct. Then, but I think, Mike, I think contract is the correct word because it's a we're saying we're going to continue.
I reread this and
your right. contract. So I move to approve the amending of the employee handbook language to change the contract provision to a letter of confirmation of continuing contract. Does that satisfy? I don't know if the contract provision is the correct way to phrase that, though.
That satisfies.
Okay.
It's a little awkward, but it satisfies.
It's so awkward. I should have.
I think that works.
I should have thought about this. I should have.
I'll second that then.
Yeah, the pieces are in place. We have a motion by Mrs. Sherman, a second by Mr. Piatt. And Evelyn, you have the joy of reading back the motion.
I don't think she was paying attention.
No.
Oh, she was. Paying attention, but she just had me reword three motions in a row. So
I will re-listen to the tape.
Yep. Okay, we're approving the rewording of the employee handbook to include the submission of a letter of confirmation of the continuing contract by May 15th for the provision of an actual contract. That's the motion, I believe, in the second, unless there's any question or concern about that motion. All those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 Aye. The opposed? Thank you. Ouch. Item number 15 this evening is to approve proposed amendments to the following board policies. Mrs. Sherman.
All right, let me get my other tab up here. All right, so I did not hear anyone from anyone in the interim with any questions, concerns, or comments about these policies. So I will go ahead with my motions, but please stop me if there is something that has come up between now and last meeting that you have not brought forward previously. So I move to approve the amendments to policy 9130, public requests, suggestions, or complaints.
Second. We have a motion by Mrs. Sherman, a second by Mr. Helm to approve the amendments to policy 9130, public requests, suggestions, or complaints. Are there any questions or concerns about the motion? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes.
I move to approve the amendments to policy 3340. And 4340, grievance procedures.
Second.
We have a motion by Mrs. Sherman, a second by Mr. Helm to approve amendments to policy 3340/4340, grievance procedure. Are there any questions or concerns about the motion? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 Aye. The opposed? The motion passes.
I move to approve amendments to policy 3131/4131, reduction in staff.
Second.
We have a motion by Mrs. Sherman, a second by Mr. Helm to approve amendments to policy 3131/4131, reduction in staff. Are there any questions or concerns regarding this motion? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. The opposed? The motion passes.
I move to approve amendments to policy 0100 definitions.
Second.
We have a motion by Sherman, a second by Mr. Helm to approve amendments to policy 0100 definitions. Are there any questions or concerns regarding this motion? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion passes.
I move to approve amendments to policy 0131.1, bylaws and policies.
Second.
We have a motion by Sherman, a second by Helm to approve amendments to policy 0131.1, bylaws and policies. Are there any questions or concerns regarding this motion? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion passes.
I move to approve amendments to policy 0144.4, indemnification.
Second.
We have a motion by Mrs. Sherman, a second by Mr. Helm to approve amendments to policy 0144.4, indemnification. Are there any questions or concerns regarding this motion? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion passes.
I move to approve amendments to policy 1213/3213/4213, student supervision and welfare.
Second.
We have a motion by Mrs. Sherman, a second by Mr. Helm to approve amendment to policy 1213/3213/4213, student supervision and welfare. Are there any questions or concerns regarding this motion? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. The opposed? The motion passes. These were approved as a second reading into our policy board policy book. Item number 16 relates to first reading. Mrs. Sherman.
So the first reading policies you'll have here, I just want to highlight a few things. The first one is 5460 graduation requirements. This is a policy that, as you can see, was last revised in June of 2020. However, I felt it warranted another look as we head into our next school year. At this time, we are not proposing a significant amount of changes. We did need to add notation for the Holocaust as well as other genocide per new state statute that has been recently approved to ensure that that is that we are compliant with that. I would just like to say to the board, be prepared. There will be the committee intends to have continuing discussion on these and some of our other requirements and do some more thorough and in-depth digging into, are there other areas we need to look at within our graduation requirements to make it more meaningful? Is everything that we have there still in there required, such as the virtual education? I think we'd say all our kids have met that requirement. Anyone in K through 12 has met their virtual education requirement after this year, but is that still relevant after a pandemic year? If not, what would be more relevant to our students in a technologically advancing age? So just so you know, not a lot in there, but more to come in future discussions. And then the remainder of our policies are NEOLA updates. 4112, 3112 were recently done again, December of 2020. So this is the language adding is NEOLA language for a new proposed policy. Should we not adopt that policy, we would need to remove that language. There are two new policies in here for you to review. I encourage you to please take a thorough look at these since they are new policies, not just corrections to the policies. The first one being 0143.2, board member information requests. You'll notice that NEOLA gave us quite an extensive list. As a committee, we recommend taking this down to just a couple of sentences to really keep it short and sweet, but get get the points across that need to be made when it comes to the board and information. And then policy 0144.5, board member behavior and code of conduct. I think this policy is really important for all of us. And I think that as we have, as a board, as I said earlier this evening when we were talking about survey results and looking at all the pieces of our district, we are one of them. Codes of conduct are good for every department and every organization. So those are our policies up. I always welcome any questions now, or please feel free to reach out to me in between now and the next meeting or at our next policy meeting, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mrs. Sherman. We'll look forward to some discussion in our next policy committee meeting. Item number 17 this evening is to approve payment of bills.
I don't want to. Just kidding. I move to approve the payment of bills.
Second.
We have a motion by Mrs. Sherman, a second by Mrs. Ward to approve the payment of bills. Are there any questions regarding the list of bills that were submitted in our board packet? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion to approve the payment of bills, please say aye.
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 The opposed? Motion passes. We will pay our bills. Item number 18 this evening, Mrs. Van Meer, is to accept donations. Have we received any?
We have not received any donations in the last couple weeks, but as I always say, we have a very generous community.
Thank you. Before we adjourn, Mr. Piat, the question has arisen with regard to our taking action this evening on the May 15th, because in the policy, in our employee handbook, it says 1 month hence, June 15th, they need to be returned. I would ask our administration to clarify with our employees the return date for contracts.
I will do that. Obviously, it won't be June 15th, so
thank
you. I will take care of that. Thank you.
Yep.
Now I move to adjourn.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Mr. Piat, a second by Mrs. Sherman to adjourn. Is there any opposition to this motion? We are adjourned.